Bonjour to everybody. I'll just make a couple of announcements before we start. But pleasure to welcome Dr. Tamara back. I was in Portugal last week during her class and just got back. But anyways, we'll talk today about nature and nurture. But just very important, I sent out last night, we'll send out today the Parshas here because of Shiva Sarbatamuz will be today at 6 p.m. So that way it'll be finished before Mincha, unless you're, I don't know where you are. But by 7 o'clock, I don't think any shul is having Mincha yet. So that'll be 6 p.m. today, the regular parshir by Rabbi Chaim Metzger, who those in Toronto, who was part of the Zichron Dov Beit Midrash last year, so that'll be at 6 p.m. My shir on the Siddur will be regular time at 9, and then next week we'll have our regular shirim that are continuing. We'll have two sort of special shirim. Rav Amnon Bazak, who's a neighbor of Dr. Spitz, will be giving shir be'ivrit.
9:30 tomorrow.
Tomorrow's my regular shiur at 9:30 a.m.
Yeah,
last week I gave it from Portugal. It was at 12:30. So yeah, tomorrow regular time 9:30. Marechet Yechasim Ben David uMichal Zeya be'eser lo be'shtayim be'tzorayim bezman Mizrach. I don't know how you say Eastern time in Hebrew. Man Mizrach doesn't sound right. But anyways, that'll be at 2 p.m. Eastern on Monday. Of course, in the morning at 10 p.m., Rabbi Etshalom will be continuing his series on Megillat Echa. And then Wednesday at 10, Rabbi Yitzi Blau, who I believe is another neighbor of Dr. Spitz. We have the Alon Shvut, the whole neighborhood who teaches here. We'll be starting a four-part series on how to study Agadah in English. Rabbi Blau is one of the Rosh Yeshivas of Yeshivat Oraita, and of course has written a lot on Agadah. So that'll be Wednesday at 10 p.m. starting. And then, of course, we'll send out details a little later, being it's Shiva Sarba Tammuz. So obviously, Tisha B'Av is around the corner. So we'll be having, of course, again, our Tisha B'Av program. Please, God, I don't say I look forward to Tisha B'Av, but I can find it a very inspiring day. I hope we'll have 8 speakers beginning at 11 a.m. Shuli Mishkin, Menachem Liebtag, Yael Ziegler. How many of those are your neighbors? 2 of those are your neighbors. Okay, Daron Peretz is not your neighbor. You got to move. If you want to live next to Daron Peretz, the head of World Mizrahi, Ilana Steinhain, you got to cross the Atlantic if you want to be her neighbor. And Ari Zivitovsky, you got to move to Beit Shemesh to be his neighbor. So anyways, that'll be, please God, on Tisha B'Av, we'll send out the information. Okay, that's a lot of announcements, more than I usually make, but that gave people who came late a chance to come in. And Vakasha, Dr. Tamara, we'll learn nurture and nature. And Rachel, I believe we're going to focus on. Vakasha, it's all yours.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you. And again, it's such a schut to be able to share words of Torah, especially we're way into Shivat Arba Tammuz already. But on a day when we're just kind of getting into transitioning into the 3 weeks and focusing on the destruction, it's really a schut to be able to teach Torah far and wide. Not only to our neighbors, but across the Atlantic. And it's really just an incredible schut to be able to be here and share Torah with you. So we're going to continue on our journey of, what did we call it? Life lessons in biblical Midrash. If last week we saw Midrash that really fills in holes where we don't have any stories or narratives, right? So those of you who were here last week, we discussed the relationship between Abraham and Yishmael, and we saw how the Midrash almost filled in a very colorful way, the relationship between Abraham and Yishmael, where we don't really see any of that in the text. This week, we're going to look at Midrash in a different, through a different lens. In this shiur, we are going to look at Midrash as a way of making connections throughout time. And we're going to be looking at numerous Midrashim in Breshit Rabbah that are going to weave together different stories throughout Tanakh, and teach us to kind of look beyond the individual stories and recognize patterns, specifically patterns within a family. So today we are going to talk about, I talked about nature versus nurture, a case study of Rachel and her descendants. And what we're going to look at is Rachel in her life and her children, right? Yosef and Binyamin. We're going to open up the source sheet in a minute. I can actually open it up now. But what we're going to do is look at these certain stories throughout Chumash and Tanakh. And we're going to then look at different midrashim and see how they pull these stories together. And what the Midrash wants to say to us, if those of you who maybe are into psychology or biology, we can discuss nature versus nurture, but there are certain characteristics. And the question is, right, is it an inborn nature or is it something that we learn, right, maybe through our upbringing or maybe through our environment, our friends, the people we associate with outside, or is it something that's inborn? And I think that this is something, first of all, I think, throughout psychology and biology, there are people who look into really what is nature versus nurture. But interesting, and I think it's just fascinating that Chazal actually discussed this, you know, all the way back in the Midrash. And today we're going to talk about what I want to call hereditary characteristics, not traits like eye color. I have blue eyes. None of my children do. But my grandson has blue eyes. So we all know how genetics work. But is there such thing as a hereditary trait? I know that my husband is very adventurous. I'm more of the reserved, like to be in control of things. And then the question is, right, my children, when my children grew up or are still constantly growing up, you know, I say, oh, he's adventurous like you, right? Is that nature or is it nurture? So the Midrash actually tells us that there are certain traits that were passed down from the 12 tribes, but meaning the 12 sons of Yaakov. And those characteristics were actually passed down not only to their children, but to their entire tribe as well. There are numerous books about this, and I always found it really fascinating to kind of look at the personalities of who the children of Yaakov were, and did they or how did they pass down these traits. I think there are certain physical traits, right? So if I ask you a tribe of lefties, right? So if you know, there is the idea that Binyamin had lefties. There were a lot of lefties in the tribe of Binyamin. We have the idea of red hair in Yehuda, in Shevet Yehuda. But we also have characteristics, meaning if I say bold, strong, takes initiative, that could describe Yehuda. If I say passionate, maybe zealous, quick to anger, very, again, jumping in, one might say Shevet Levi. This ties into this week's Parsha. We're finally back together after your double Parsha last week, right? But Pinchas, right? We know that Levi is with a Shimon, jump in to rescue their sister Dinah in Shechem. And that zealous nature is almost, you know, passed down to all of Shevet Levi, right? We do see that Shevet Levi and Shevet Shimon, though that's a discussion for another time. But what does Shevet Levi, you know, do? We see them in Chet Ha'egel coming to Moshe to help, again, in a very zealous nature. We see Pinchas in this week's Parsha, he can't take it anymore. He just needs to act. So this is, again, his action was in last week's Parsha. His bracha is in this week's Parsha. But that leads me to a discussion about these characteristics. And I think psychologists will tell you, but I think Chazal will tell you as well, that every character trait can be used, right, for good or for bad. I feel like we're talking about Marvel, but right, everyone has great power and you have a great responsibility to use it. And the question is, how do you use this power, right? So Shevet Levi is an excellent example. Levi himself used it again, I think a topic for another shiur, right? Was the killing or massacre of Shechem positive or negative? But it's definitely, there is definite criticism there. Levi is definitely zealous in terms of his desire to save his sister. And the question is, what do we do with that idea, right? One could say, and Chazal do say, that the avodah in the Beit HaMikdash, which is very physical, is a way to channel that characteristic. The Gemara talks about if someone has a nature towards blood, right? Some sort of violent nature, use it for good and become, right, a moel, a shochet, right? So we have this concept in Chazal of taking certain characteristics, right, that everyone has or different people have, and we can see how they're used either for good or for bad. So for today, I want to discuss Rachel and her children, and I want to see how her children reflect her own characteristics. The Midrash is going to point out these particular characteristics and how they're used for good and maybe for, I don't want to say for bad, but maybe less good in the beginning and more good later on. So let's look at the birth of the children of Rachel. We have, right, we know that Rachel is longing for children and watching her other co-wives, her sister and the other wives, have children, bear children for Yaakov. And Rachel is tormented by the fact that she does not have children. Finally, in Perek Lamed of Sefer Breshit, in the 30th chapter, we have the final culmination of all of her tefillot. It says that Vayizkor Elokim et Rachel, Vayishma Eleha Elokim, Vayiftach et Rachma. Finally, God remembers Rachel, and he opens up, he hears her, and he opens up her womb. Vatahar vatalid ben, right? She becomes pregnant, and she has a child, and she names her child, right? Vatomer asaf Elokim et cherpati, right? God has taken away my disgrace. Again, the disgrace of being barren. Vatikra et shmo Yosef lemor, Yosef Hashem li ben acher, right? Again, fascinatingly, Rachel says, Be'ezrat Hashem, I will have another child, right? That's the name of her first child. I hope that I will have another, right? Yosef, as in to add, may God add to my children. She still wants more children, as we can see even in the naming of Yosef. And five chapters later, in Perek Lamed Hey, we have just such a tragic end to Rachel. The family is traveling. Vayisu mi Beit El, vayhi od kivrat haaretz lavo Efrata, vateled Rachel, vatakash beledata. Right, as they enter, as they're traveling in Eretz Yisrael, they're finally home in Yaakov's land, and Rachel goes into labor, and she is in hard labor. She's at the end of labor. Vayhi b'hakashuta b'ledata v'tomer laham yeledet al tiri ki gam ze lach ben. Right, the midwife, right, she's really in distress. The midwife says, don't worry, This is also a son. Just a personal story, not to compare, but I have a number of boys, and I told the midwives that I have three boys at home. And when I went into labor, and then I gave birth to my fourth son, they're like, oh, it's a boy. And I'm like, how about Mazal Tov? It's a boy. Again, biblical times, definitely a son is definitely maybe celebrated more. But the Mialedet says, don't worry, this is also a child. I imagine that definitely made Rachel, right? This is pre-ultrasound, so she did not know what she was having. But Rachel recognizes that she has, right, two sons to add to the sons of Yaakov. Vayhi b'tzet nafsha. Kimeta vatikra shemo ben oni ve'aviv karalo binyamin. Right, and really just such a dramatic telling of the story. Right, we feel like we're there in the tent as Rachel is breathing her last breath. Right, as she is dying, right, the son is born, and she names him Ben Oni, but her husband, right, Yaakov, changes the name to Binyamin. Vatamat Rachel v'tikaber baderech Efratahi Beit Lechem. Right, and Rachel dies, right, maybe I'm hoping with the baby in her arms, and she is baderech, which is right on the way near to Efrata Beit Lechem. I think it's a Shuli Mishkin shir on where exactly that is. What we have is we have a scene set where Rachel has her two children, Yosef and Binyamin. I want to go on to Rachel's descendants. We are going to look at Yosef first, meaning Rachel's child, but then we're going to look at later on in history, later on in Tanakh, where we have the descendants of Rachel, specifically Esther and Mordechai, right? They come from Shevet Binyamin. And what I'd like to do when we read the stories is I want you to start thinking about the connection between these stories. The Midrash is going to connect them and draw, as I said, right, different points to compare. But I want to read the stories so that we are all familiar with the story. So we're going to start with Yosef. As we know, right, Yosef is sold into slavery. He is then taken into Potiphar's house. Then he's sent to jail. Then he's finally brought out of jail to interpret Paro's dream. And when Paro recognizes the greatness of Yosef, then Paro in Perek Mem Aleph says to Yosef, since God has made all this known to you, meaning the interpretation of the dream, there is none so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my court and your command shall all my people be directed. Only with respect to the throne shall I be superior to you. Right? So he says, Atatiye al Beiti. You will be on my house. That is not a real translation, but you will be in charge of everything that happens here in the palace, and everyone will follow your command. And Paro says, Re'enatati otcha al kol eretz Mitzrayim. You are going to command all of Egypt. Vayisar Paro et tabato me'al yado. I'm going to read it in Hebrew because we'll see some parallels, right? Paro takes off his ring, right, from his finger. Vayiten ota al yad Yosef. Right, he gives the ring to Yosef. Vayalbesh oto bigdeshesh. Right, he gives him, I guess one could say, the court garb. Right, he gets very fancy clothing. Vayasem reved zahav al tzavaro. He is given this some sort of a collar or a necklace made out of gold on his neck. Vayarkev oto b'markevet hamishne asher lo v'karu lefanav Avarech v'naton oto al kol eretz Mitzrayim. Right? He is, they put him on a chariot and they ride him through the city and they call before him, right, that he should, right, avarech, right, that he is maybe blessed, and he is in command of all of the land of Mitzrayim. Vayomer paro el Yosef, ani paro ubil adecha lo yarim ish et yado ve'et raglo bechol eretz Mitzrayim. Right, paro says to Yosef, but don't forget, I'm still paro. But of course, without you, right, no one should lift up a hand or foot in all of the land of Egypt. So we have literally a rags to riches story of Yosef in the court of Paro. Let's jump to Esther. Let's jump. I think very famously, we're all familiar with the story. But when we read it one after the other, the comparisons jump out at us, right? We have when Achashverosh cannot sleep at night, and he reads of Mordechai, and then he decides he's going to give him great honor, and all of a sudden, who should show up at his door, right in the middle of the night? We have Haman, right? Vayavo Haman vayomer lo hamelech, ma lasut b'ish asher hamelech chafet b'ikaro. Right? What should the king? So Haman, right? Haman walks in. He thinks he's getting, he's going to get honor. The king says to him, what do you think we should do for someone that the king wants to honor? And Haman says, right, thinking it's himself, right, Vayomer Haman bilibo limi, ichbot hamelech lasot yakar yoter mimeni. Right, beautifully, this is one of the psukim that the Gemara uses to show that Esther has true nevuah when she writes this, because how would Esther know what Haman says in his heart, right? But the pasuk says in the Megillah, Haman says in his heart, obviously, Achashverosh is talking about me. Vayomer Haman el Hamelech, ish asher Hamelech chafetz bikaro. Ah, let me tell you what you should do. Yaviu lavush malchut asher lavash bo hamelech, right? Bring him again this fancy clothing and visus asher rachav alav hamelech, right? Bring the horse that the king has ridden on, the asher natan keter malchut berosho, right? And the royal keter, right, the crown, the natona lavush vahasus al yad ish misarei hamelech hapartamim vihilbishu et haish asher hamelech hafetz bikaro, right, and you should give all of these things to the person who the king feels is most deserving, vehir kivuhu al hasus berchov ha'ir, and you should parade him on the horse in the city, v'kar'u lefanav kacha ya'aseh la'ish asher hamelech hafetz bikaro. Right? This is what we do for the person who the king values and wants to honor. Vayomer hamelech lehaman, and you know how Haman must be sitting there in anticipation, and the king says, right, maher kach et alavush ve'et asus, kasher dibarta ve'asachen lemordechai. Hayehudi, right? Hayoshev b'shar hamelech, al tafel davar mikol asher dibarta. Right? The king says, "Wow, you're brilliant. This is exactly what we should do for Mordechai." So we have again another descendant of Rachel who is given honor from the king. He's given clothing. He's ridden throughout the city and really given honor. One more from Megillat Esther, and here we have towards the end of the Megillah. Bayom hahu natan hamelech achashverosh leEsther hamalka et bet Haman tsror hayehudim uMordechai ba lifnei hamelech ki higida Esther mahula. Right, so we have at the climax. After the climax of the Mishteh and after the battle, Achashverosh gives Esther Beit Haman and Mordechai is brought to the king. And we were missing one piece of our puzzle if we were going to link it to Yosef. We were missing something in the previous perek. So here in perek chet, we have the piece that we were missing. Vayasar hamelech et ta'abato asher he'evir mihaman ve'yitna le'mordechai ve'tasem ester et mordechai al bit Haman, right? And now we have the final piece of the puzzle. The king's ring is given or taken from Haman and given to Mordechai. So now let's enter the world of Midrash. And I actually was first introduced to this idea by Dr. Yael Ziegler. And really, it's such a beautiful idea how the Midrash weaves all of these things together. So first, we're actually going to look literally at the words of these stories. And the Midrash tells us in Breishit Rabbah, again, we started with Yosef, so the Midrash is actually quoted in Breishit, in the stories of Yosef. And the Midrash tells us, right, Vayihi kidabra el Yosef yom yom. Here we're going back to before the Paro scene, we're going back to Beit Potiphar, and how Eshet Potiphar tries to entice Yosef yom yom, right, every day. Rabbi Yudan b'shem Rabbi Binyamin Omer, Baneha shel Rachel Nisan Shaveh Ugdulatan Shaveh. And that's really our theme for today. Rabbi Yudan says that the children of Rachel were equally tested and equal in their greatness. And what do we mean by that? And here the Midrash continues. How are they tested? And it says, Vayhi kedabra el Yosef yom yom, right? This word of Eshet Potiphar trying to wear down Yosef. And then we have in Esther, Vayhi keomram elav yom yom, right? Every day. They're telling Haman about Mordechai, right? Yom yom, Mordechai will not bow down to Haman. And we continue. Velo shama eleha, right? Velo shama alehem, right? So they don't listen, right? They don't listen, both the children of Rachel, or I should say the descendants of Rachel. So that is their nisayon, their testing. Where do we see their gdulatan, their greatness? So the Midrash continues exactly as we read before, right? Vayesar paro etabato, right? Yosef is given the ring of paro, and so too vayesar hamelech et tabato in Megillat Esther, right? Achashverosh gives Mordechai the ring, right? The vayiten ota al yad Yosef, Vayitna leMordechai. It's given to both of them. Vayalbesh oto bigdei shesh. The paro gave him this royal clothing. The same thing. V'natan halavush v'hasus. It's given to Mordechai. Veikach Haman. Vayasem revid hazahav al tzavaro. Again, Yosef is given this golden, again, necklace or some sort of ornament. Vatesem esteret Mordechai al bet Haman. Vayerkav, again, Mordechai also gets this greatness. Vayerkav oto b'markevet hamishne asher lo, vayerkivehu al hasus berachov ha'ir. They are both paraded throughout the city. One is in a chariot, one is on a horse. I guess that's the difference between Egypt and Persia. Vayikra lefanav, vayikra lefanav, right? They are given equal honor throughout the city as they are paraded throughout the city. Okay, so we have, as I mentioned, the idea that they're both challenged. What do I mean by both challenged? Yosef and Mordechai and Esther are in a foreign court, right? They are outside of Israel, and they are being challenged every day in different ways, or one could say in similar ways, to give up on their morality, to give up on their religion. And they are both, though the other side of that coin is they are both given honor and given greatness in the same way. They're both risen. They're both given greatness in the court, in the foreign court. They're both seen as Mishne Lemelech, second to only the king, whether it's Yosef in Egypt or it's Mordechai and Esther in Persia. But I'd like to continue to three more midrashim. I'm sorry, I couldn't find the English, so I will translate. The midrash makes another connection. It says, "Vayhi kasher yalda Rachel et Yosef." When Rachel gives birth to Yosef, at that moment, Yaakov says, okay, now we're picking up and we're going back to Israel. And the midrash wonders, what is it about the birth of Yosef that makes Yaakov feel that he can return to Israel? And the Midrash tells us, here it is really filling in, right? Kevan shenolad Yosef, nolad sitno shel Esav. At the moment that Yosef was born, the Satan, but I will maybe say the downfall or the foil of Esav was born. And here the Midrash tells us that there's something about the children of Rachel that are going to bring down Esav, right? And here the Midrash says, right, Vayomer Yaakov el Lavan, Shalcheini ve'elcha el Mekomi. That's it, I'm ready to go. De'amar Rabbi Pinchas, v'shem Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, Masoreti, right, we have a tradition, She'en Esav Nofel, Ella biyad baneha shel Rachel. There is something about the destiny of Rachel and her children that Esav and his descendants are going to fall by the hand of the children of Rachel, which allows Yaakov to come back to Israel, but is also an echo for us for Mordechai and Esther, who are going to be battling Amalek. And that is another way that we see a trait of the children of Rachel. The next midrash, I think, is a beautiful idea, not just of the children of Rachel, but of Rachel herself. The midrash tells us, Rachel tafsa pelech shtika. Rachel had the characteristic of silence, of not always saying what she, you know, was thinking, but she was silent. Ve'amdu kol baneha ba'alei mistarin. And therefore, right, she passed down this trait of silence to her children. Where do we see that Rachel is silent? I think the Midrash is alluding to the wedding of Yaakov to Leah, and where Rachel is silent and doesn't tell Yaakov what is going on, and gives, of course, in the Midrash, gives the simanim to her sister, but Rachel is silent. Where do we see that her children are silent? We see it in Binyamin and the children. So we are going to, I think someone raised their hands, but I'll just, if we can leave questions to the end, unless it's a clarifying question.
I just wanted to know whether this was her test, whether Leah might have been killed if she hadn't given the signs. Lavan is the patriarch.
It's interesting to, that is an interesting question. If you are, you're taking the language of the Midrash and you're saying, is that seen as a nisayon, right? As a challenge? Or the way I read it was that it was her nature, right? It is a characteristic of Rachel. But we can discuss more at the end of the shiur. I think it's a beautiful point that you're raising. But it seems that it's a characteristic. Binyamin seems to also be silent, right? He knows about the selling of Yosef, but he doesn't say anything. The Midrash says that Binyamin's stone on the Urim v'Tumim is called the Yashpeh. maybe jasper, I think. And the Midrash says, what does it mean, yeshpeh? It's a play on word. Yeshpeh, he has a mouth. Yodea b'michirato shel Yosef ve'eino magid. Right? He knows something, Binyamin, but he does not say anything. So again, that could be your point, Shelley, that it's a challenge, right? It's a test. Is he going to say something or not? We also have Shaul. Let's not forget another descendant of Binyamin, right? Shaul is actually coronated by Shmuel, but does not tell anybody. And we have very famously Esther, right? Esther, Ein Esther Magedet Moladeta Ve'et Ama. Maybe these people can all be very good spies, right? They're all very good at keeping a secret. They do not tell, right, whatever secret information they're keeping. What's interesting about this characteristic of keeping quiet is, and maybe this is what Shelley was alluding to, sometimes that's good, but sometimes it's not good, right? If you remember in Megillat Esther, Mordechai eventually tells Esther, up until this point, it's been great, but now you need to break the silence, meaning silence can be used for good, but sometimes it's important to use your voice. And interestingly, it's Bnei Rachel that have the power of speech, right? Yosef has the power of interpreting dreams. We have, as I mentioned, Esther finally has to confront Ahasuerus and reveal her secret. And ultimately, I think beautifully, as we're in the time of the 3 weeks, right, the Nevi'im tell us, right, who is the one who is going to call out and bring our salvation? It's going to be Rachel, ultimately. Right? Kol birama nishma. It is going to be Rachel. Maybe in her lifetime she was quiet, but in the next world she needs to cry out. And that voice is going to bring about our salvation. So here we see silence as being a virtue, but there are times where silence needs to be broken and needs those people need to act. And the final midrash that I want to bring is the midrash that compares Yosef to Rachel. It says, "Vayhi Yosef yafet to'ar v'yafet mar'eh." Yosef is beautiful, and we're told that sometimes he's sitting and twirling his hair. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak zurok chutra le'ara ve'al ikara nafik. This, I think, is the Aramaic version of "the apple doesn't fall far from the tree." I think it's saying, right, if you throw a stick down, it'll find its roots. Right, what does it see? What does it say? Lefisha katuv v'rachel haita yifat to'ar. Right, lefichach v'hi Yosef. Here the Midrash says, Rachel was beautiful, and so was Yosef. And I'm going to continue, right, to Esther, right? She does win the beauty pageant. So there's definitely beauty that runs in the family. And really here is the question, and it goes back to our idea of using these traits negatively versus positively. Each one of these characters has this trait. We'll call it beauty. We can also call it charisma, but in the beginning of their journey, that trait is, I would say, is a nisayon, as you mentioned, right? Yosef, with all his beauty and looking at the mirror, is teased and bullied and really abused by his brothers. It brings about his downfall. Though at the end, right, look at in Potiphar's house with Eshet Potiphar, I'm sure she is not necessarily, I don't think she is attracted to his good midos. I think she's attracted to his beauty. So we do see that it is the downfall. Esther is taken to Ahasuerus' palace. She sees that as a negative, meaning the ultimate challenge. But ultimately, both Yosef and Esther learn how to use that trait in the positive. And we're going to get to that in a moment. But I do want to add one more thing. And this is not in the Midrash, but as I mentioned, I heard from Dr. Yael Ziegler, comparison between the children of Rachel and her descendants is the role of clothing. And I'm sure you can think about all of these examples. It starts with Yosef and his kutonet pasim. Therein, on one hand, Yaakov wants to show him kavod and honor and favoritism, but it really leads to his downfall. We have bigdei malchut, right? Clothing that's given to them in the courts of each of their foreign kings. It's interesting that one could look at clothing in a negative way, right? It's external, it's superficial, what does it matter? Right? Rav Hirsch talks about beged, right? We call clothing beged. It's like begida. It is a contradiction, right? It is, right? I can, if I'm feeling sad, I can wear dark colors to reflect how I'm feeling. But if I'm feeling sad, I can also wear bright colors to hide or mask what I'm feeling, right? The role of clothing is used differently throughout the children of Rachel for their advantage, right? This idea of dressing up, right? When Esther comes to the palace, she's given all of these clothes. She dresses up to see Ahasuerus. Interestingly, right, there is almost a fight about clothes between Mordechai and Esther, right? If you remember in Perek Dalid, Mordechai shows up to outside the palace with his sackcloths, right? He's in mourning, and Esther almost like sends him a package and is like, I don't know what you're doing. You need to get dressed if you want to come towards the palace. And he says, what are you talking about? Don't you understand what's going on here? Right? The clothing reflects, right? Esther is in her courtesan clothing. Mordechai is in sackcloth, and he's reflecting the internal mourning of the decree externally, right, outwardly with his clothing. I want to finish up this shiur by really discussing the transformation, or we can call it the character development of the descendants of Rachel. If at the beginning we were talking about Yosef playing with his hair and looking at the mirror and talking about his wonderful traits of beauty, we see that really Yosef goes through a transformative experience, right? He goes through many lows till he gets really to the ultimate low of being imprisoned in Mitzrayim, to then recognize what is his transformation, where he recognizes it's all from God, right? He says to the brothers, right, after Yaakov dies, Yosef, the brothers are concerned that Yosef is now going to take revenge on them. And Yosef says, what are you talking about? Right, ve'ata al ta'atzvu ve'al yichar be'enichem ki machartem oti hena. Don't be nervous. Don't be upset because you sold me. Ki limchia shelachani Elokim lifnichem. Right, this is not about you. It's not even about me. Right, God is the one who is behind this entire narrative. And really, that's what it's all about. And I think that ultimately, that is the characteristic, the greatest characteristic that Rachel passed down to her children, which is the recognition that it all comes down to God. We have our hishtaglut, but ultimately, it is God who creates our destiny for us. In Esther, we have a similar transformation. If it's, again, it's, I don't think it's Esther sitting around and looking at the mirror. We don't really have that, but we definitely have a very passive Esther in the beginning of the Megillah. She is sent to the, or taken to the palace of Ahasuerush and told to not speak to anybody about who she is and who her background is. But ultimately in Perek Dalid, really my favorite Perek of Megillat Esther, we have this whether it's a light bulb moment or a slow transformation, we have the powerful discussion between Esther and Mordechai. And Mordechai tells her, right, if you continue with your silence, right, this is not a time to be silent. I know I told you to be silent till now, but this is not the time to be silent. If you continue to be silent, revach v'hatzala ya'amod liyehudim mimakom acher. Don't worry. God is going to save the Jewish people and it'll come from somewhere else, right? Don't worry about that. Ve'at u'beit avich to'avedu. You might want to worry about that, though. You will not be saved because you didn't take advantage of your abilities, of your position. You have a unique opportunity at this moment, and this is your moment. Umi yodea im le'et kazot higat lemalchut. Right? Who knows if this is the whole reason that you became queen? And I think this idea of destiny, right? This idea that we all have a purpose in this world. And who knows what that purpose is, right? We never know. I think that, really the message of the Midrash is that we're all given certain, I would say, natural talents, natural abilities, whether it is your creativity, your strength, your charisma. Everyone is given a certain nature. But the question really is, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with this great power? And I think that the lesson from the Midrash and from all of these stories is we have to look out for those opportunities, right? Mi yodea im le'et kazot higat lemalchut. Right? Who knows why you were put at this moment, in this place, with these people, with this opportunity? Are you going to use your powers for good? Or are you going to miss out on your opportunities? And really, I want to end this shiur with a bracha to all of us. May we use our, first of all, may we recognize our abilities. May we sharpen them. May we strengthen them. And then may we use them to make this world a better place. I want to open it up now to comments, questions. I see there's some questions here in the chat. Another similarity between Yosef and Mordechai is that they rise to power without sacrificing their Jewish identity. Beautiful. I love that idea. Right? All of the stories that we mentioned, all of Bnei Rachel, that we brought up today, rise to power in a foreign power, right? We also have Daniel, who's also in a foreign power, and they do not give up their values, their morality. So beautiful. Yes, I agree 100%. Another question, how do we see that Rachel had or passed to her children this faith that it is all in God's hands? Surely she did not accept her infertility as God's will. That is an excellent question. Again, first of all, how could you're saying, where does it come from? Meaning, do we see this in Rachel? I think that we do see Rachel doing everything she can, right? Again, I don't think that if we say it's all up to God, it means that we sit down and do nothing. I think we all have our own hishtadlut, and Rachel does daven, and she does not give up. And I think that that is what is passed down. I think that even, again, the Gemara talks about Rachel being the only one who can bring salvation for her children, because she does recognize that she can call out to God. So I do think, again, I agree with you that we don't necessarily see it in the pshat, but I do think that we do see it as a you kind of under the radar, like kind of things that happen behind the scenes in Rachel's life. One more interesting, that Yosef assumes that he knows why everything happened to him, while Mordechai is not quite so sure. Ah, interesting that he says, "Mi yodea." I think that's your question, that Mordechai says, "Mi yodea." In my humble opinion, I think when he says, "Mi yodea," I think he means, right, I know that this is God, right? I think, right, we always say in tefillah, right, who could be greater than you? That it's rhetorical. There is no one greater than you. So I think when he says mi yodea, I think he does know. But it could be that you're saying it's a little bit more subtle. That is for sure. Yosef is very clear that this is all from God. I do think that is the pshat reading of Mordechai, but you could be right that it is maybe a little bit more subtle and subtext. That was the word I was looking for before. Okay, I'd love to open it up if anybody has any comments or questions.
Yes.
May I
intercede? Thank you. Yosef is not shown to be quiet when he's explaining his dream to his brothers. And how would you explain his inner attitude?
Excellent. Yes, excellent question. Just because you have a characteristic or trait doesn't mean you always use it. I think that is exactly the point. That's a beautiful point, meaning if we're going to talk about character development, Yosef does not use the traits that he has in a positive way, right? As I mentioned in the beginning, he is very superficial, maybe very focusing on his external beauty. And I think exactly as you mentioned, he does not know when to be quiet. I think that is a fault. He doesn't know, and he gets his. I think that goes back to what was mentioned in the beginning. If someone says, right, is the shtika a challenge? I think that he failed in that one. But later on, he learns when to speak up and when not to speak up, right? When he solves the dreams, when he interprets the dreams, he knows not to say, I know the interpretation. He knows how to use this character trait, litova, for good. Excellent.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions?
Yes. I'm wondering, you talk about where Rachel is buried and she's going to call out for her children and stuff like that. That implies the entire Jewish people, not just Binyamin and if there's anybody left from Ephraim and stuff like that. But we don't really see that. The actual end of Megillat Esther is that most of the people liked Mordechai, right? Not that all the Jews.
I see what you're saying. When I mentioned the idea of Kol Berama Nishma, I was talking about the ultimate Yeshua or redemption. It is at least in the Gemara, it's seen that it is Rachel who cries over her children for Moshiach to come. What one could say that it is also for Shivat Zion, for people to come back, but you are correct. Not everyone comes back after the first Galut. But when I mentioned the idea of Rachel crying over her children, it was more about the future. And I would say it's about us. It is Rachel crying for her children to return to Israel and to have the ultimate salvation.
Is she crying for us to get along? Because part of the reason why we're in Galut is we didn't get along. And her test, we don't see a resolution of her problem with her sister, Leah, of where they get along, or then two other wives. You know, it's left hanging.
It's a beautiful question. It is not clear. It seems that Rachel is crying ultimately for Moshiach to come and for her children to be redeemed and brought back from Galut. I would imagine, and especially as we're in the 3 weeks, I imagine that the salvation comes when we atone for, or correct the ailments of our society. So I think that many people speak about the idea of ahavat chinam. So one could say that maybe that is what we're talking about. Again, the Navi is not particular. I think the Navi is more general in terms of salvation. I think that's up to us to understand what does it mean to make this world, right? How do we bring the Yeshua faster? And I think that number one is ahavat chinam, in order to combat the sinat chinam of the Second Temple period. So I think that that's actually our responsibility. As we mentioned, one can cry out to God, but one needs to take matters into our own hands. So that is definitely a responsibility that we have to really make the world a better place in any way that we can. Okay, final, are there any other questions? Well, I really thank you all for the schut to be able to learn together. Looking forward to learning together next week as well. We're going to see a different aspect of Midrash next week. So I'm looking forward to our continued learning. May you all have a meaningful fast and a Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you, Yasher Koach.
Thank you very much.
As I mentioned at the beginning, our Parsha Shir this evening will be at 6 p.m. as opposed to 8:30 p.m. Rabbi Chaim Metzger, because I don't think at 8:30, the fast is going to end in the middle. That's not a great time for a Shir. So the Shir will be 6 p.m. if you can make it. And then my regular Shir tomorrow morning, 9:30 on the Siddur. And then Rabbi Liebtag at 11:15 on Sunday morning, as I mentioned also earlier. Of course, the Eicha Shir Monday morning. And Rav Amnon Bazak is giving a special Shir Bivrit at 2 p.m. on Monday, and Rabbi Yitzi Blau is starting a series Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Agadah, how to study Agadah. Okay, everybody, have, as Dr. Tamara said, have a meaningful fast. And for most of us here, it's still a long way to go. The fast where I live ends at 9:39, I believe. Wow. So Toronto is sort of the western end of the eastern time zone. So it's, Tisha B'Av is the good time to visit South Africa. That's the time to go to South Africa.
Yes, it is. Yes. Or South America.
We
lived in Uruguay. It was the fastest Tisha B'Av we ever had. It was
amazing. And then went at 5:30 or 6:00?
Yeah, 5:30. On the other hand, Asara B'Tevet was the longest fast I've ever had.
So you have to leave before Asara B'Tevet. Don't stay from Tisha B'Av to Asara B'Tevet.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody. Okay. Have a meaningful day. Okay. Be well. We'll see you in 7 hours. Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.